Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, hi, and welcome. I am your host, Emma Gunnar-Wardner, and in my nearly 20-year career as a beauty and health writer, I have interviewed a lot of people. Supermodels, entrepreneurs, authors, celebrities, and doctors. And many of these conversations had a real impact on me, and I'd come away feeling inspired, excited, informed, and really empowered. And at the back of my mind, I'd always think, I wish I could just publish the tape so people could really feel that conversation. Well, on this podcast, you get to feel the conversation. I talk with experts, guests, and a few friends who I hope will inspire, inform, and empower you, and maybe also challenge you, whether you're looking for self-help, self-improvement, beauty advice, health insights, business know-how, or just some good old-fashioned life advice and a bit of a laugh. It's all here. Welcome to the show. My guest in this episode of the podcast is elite vegan sports nutritionist TJ Waterfall. Now, if you're listening to this episode when it goes live, which is the end of January 2021, then you will no doubt have spent the last few weeks being inundated with messaging about Veganuary and all the trappings that go with that. Honestly, I've had it on social media, I've had it from my online shopping sources, I've been targeted for various vegan delivery boxes and all sorts. It's been quite a lot actually recently, and there has definitely been a shift towards veganism and or a more plant-based way of eating, because more and more research into its benefits show incredibly persuasive results. In fact, ever since I had conversations last year with Dr. Rupi Orjila and Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, I've been thinking myself about just making more of my meals plant-based, because they say the benefits are so many and varied. In TJ's work as an elite sports nutritionist, though, he has seen it improve not just how people feel generally, but he's seen it improve people's physical performance and their recovery. However, let's just be very honest about something. Veganism gets a bad rap, right? There's that old joke, how do you know if someone's a vegan? Don't worry, they'll tell you. And that goes hand in hand with this idea that making this kind of dietary shift is really complicated, takes a lot of effort and planning, and is more fuss than a pleasure. TJ is a sports nutritionist who works with professional sports people, who makes a very good case for the fact that every obstacle you think stands between you and veganism or a plant-based diet is actually a bit of a nonsense and easily overcome. In fact, as you'll hear in this episode, every time I bring one of those obstacles up or I share a criticism, he's very quickly able to immediately squash them. It's, you know, there's an answer for everything, and it's so good to speak to somebody who actually lives it himself but also helps other people apply it and show actually it's not difficult, it's really easy. Perhaps his best response to all the criticisms and all of the sort of misinformation out there about this kind of diet though and this kind of lifestyle is his book, The Plant-Based Power Plan, which I was very lucky to get a copy of before it went on sale. And it's a very comprehensive and very practical guide for not only maximizing your physical performance and recovery. So if that's very much at the front of your mind about how you want to feel and whether you're particularly active and you want to improve your active performance, your sports performance, for example, but also about tweaking your nutrition to make sure you're getting enough energy, whatever it is that you're doing. But perhaps one of the things that is most useful is that TJ, who is also a chef, has shared 30 nutrient-rich recipes. So you're not just kind of learning the principles and the science, of which there is a lot, trust me. There's a whole section in the book just about how to read and understand the clinical data and how to know what information out there is really helpful and what information out there is just kind of marketing nonsense. It's really, really useful. And if you sometimes think, well, I kind of get veganism now, but where do I start? This book also contains proven recipes that are delicious, nutrient rich, and will really help you feel great. So in this episode, TJ and I discuss what the difference is between being vegan and plant-based, because you will notice I've used the terms interchangeably because I kind of thought they were the same thing, but there actually is a difference. Also, how to discern what information is accurate and what might be marketing blurb or not entirely true. Why a plant-based diet doesn't mean you'll miss out on key nutrients. Why cutting meat out of your diet won't mean you're missing out on protein. That is one of the biggest questions that I know TJ gets. But when I mentioned to friends that I was speaking to a vegan nutritionist, they said, what about protein? You will not struggle to find it elsewhere. And he explains why. The health benefits of eating a plant-based diet, both on cardiovascular health and the overall risk that has on other chronic conditions, the reduction in risk it has on other chronic conditions, I should say. The data is really quite convincing, and overwhelmingly it favours being plant-based. And then also why a plant-based diet can have such a positive effect on how you feel and so much more. You will be very quick to understand that TJ's understanding of veganism and the work that he's done in veganism and plant-based diet is very in-depth. There's a lot of science, there's a lot of data. So this isn't just somebody who has a few recipes. This is someone who has done a deep dive and research and also applies it to his own life, but helps other people to use it in their own life to increase their physical performance and, as I said, their physical recovery, which I think we can often forget to talk about rest and recovery. And actually, our diet can really help with that too. So the links to TJ, his book, his social media, and everything discussed in this episode can be found in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. But without any further ado, here he is, TJ Waterfall on The Emma Gunn Show. TJ Waterfall, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. How are you?
I'm excellent and actually really excited. And also, as I've listeners, we've been having a quick chat, also quite nervous because you are an elite vegan sports nutritionist. And the reason I have nerves is because I feel as though this is actually quite a challenging topic to get your head around, not least, even if you were just to look at it scientifically, quite challenging. But then you've got all of the conflicting information that's out there in the world, but you very much come down to the science, but you also apply all of your knowledge about veganism and the plant-based diet in your work on a day-to-day basis.
That's right. And you're right, there's so much misinformation out there. And it's something I really try to address with both my clients and in the book. I actually dedicated a whole chapter to guiding people as to how to best weigh up the evidence themselves, because there is so much misinformation. Some of it, at best can be misleading, but at worst, it can even be life-threatening, some of the information you'll find on the internet. So I think it's really important that people understand what to believe, who to trust. I think it's important to sort of guide people as to how to do that.
I was really impressed by that because long-time listeners of the podcast will know I'm not into fluff and nonsense. I really like my clinical trials. I love a bit of data. I just like something, a double blind is the holy grail. I just like something that shows it to be true and not anecdotal. There's space for that, obviously. And I think it's really interesting. We've talked on this podcast before about critical thinking and how a clickbait headline to a health website or a women's health magazine can be so seductive, but might not actually have all of the facts. And then you read something else and it conflicts and you don't know where to begin. So I'm going to actually ask you, my first question is this. Your book is called The Plant-Based Power Plan. Now, if you are plant-based, are you vegan? Are they one and the same?
I'd say there's slight nuanced differences. I would say the term veganism usually refers to people who adopt a plant-based diet, but they might do it for ethical reasons or environmental sustainability reasons. And so at the forefront of their intentions might not be their health and performance and recovery, those sorts of things. And so it might not necessarily be the healthiest diet. It could be, but not necessarily. Whereas a plant-based diet, and especially a whole foods plant-based diet, usually people would adopt that for its health benefits and benefits around performance. So things like improved energy and recovery and endurance, all those things that sort of encompass performance. So I'd say there's slight nuances. There's definitely some overlap. But as a nutritionist, I certainly advocate, trying to steer towards a whole foods plant-based diet as much as possible.
And when I was looking at the data in the book, particularly in the sections about the health benefits of following a vegan / plant-based diet, the evidence is overwhelming. Obviously, you can't put into play genetic factors, but in terms of the extrinsic things that we can do to support our health, the data comes back and it's almost shocking how big a difference it can make to your chances of developing things like cardiovascular disease, certain cancers.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the evidence is very strong. And like you said, almost overwhelming. It shows that a plant-based diet significantly reduces risk of the most chronic, the most major and prevalent chronic diseases in the West. So particularly heart disease, cancer, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's, dementia. And in fact, several studies show that vegans tend to live longer. And I should say, not all studies agree on that. Some studies show that vegans or people eating a plant-based diet tend to live longer. Some studies show no significant difference. But I think even if vegans or people eating a plant-based diet didn't live longer, the science certainly shows that eating a whole food plant-based diet can at the very least delay the onset of chronic diseases. So that's still a huge, huge benefit because you're giving yourself the best chance of living a healthy and active life well into old age. So I like to look at a whole foods plant-based diet as potentially adding years to your life, but also adding life to your years as well.
That's a really nice way of looking at it. Now, everyone usually has a story about how they came to be plant-based or how they came to be vegan, which is why there's that joke, isn't there? How do you know? How can you tell if someone's a vegan? Don't worry, they'll tell you. But you are an elite sports nutritionist. And I guess the elite really refers to the fact that you work with professional sports people to increase, amplify their performance as well as their recovery. So were you always plant-based, or was that something that developed over time because of what you saw in your work?
It was a bit of both, actually. I have to admit that my initial reasons for going plant-based were mostly to do with animal welfare and the environment. But then my journey into nutrition, it started with studying human biology and psychology at university. And that was brilliant. It gave me a really good understanding of how the human body and the mind works. And both of those aspects are actually really important for understanding nutrition. Then I spent several years working in kitchens. So that was really great. I was able to kind of hone my chefing skills during that time. And then I went back to university to study a master's degree in nutrition at UCL. And I'd say that's when the career in nutrition really took off, because following from that, I worked in public health with the NHS, working with communities in West London with weight management. I returned back to UCL to be involved in a nutrition research project. And throughout all this time, I was quite active on social media, purely for the enjoyment of it, really, because I love sharing about the things I was learning and all the plant-based food I was cooking. And it was from there primarily that the requests for working with clients one-to-one began coming in, because it was around that time that the demand for working with a qualified and experienced nutritionist, but one who specialized in plant-based nutrition, really began to take off. And I think that's, I think that the noticing all of the profound health and performance benefits associated with a plant-based diet, and all realizing all of the science and data that I learned about during university, and the effects that has on the clients, was really profound and tangible results. And so, I guess the more I see that, the more excited I get about sharing that with other people. And I think that's really the reason I got so excited about writing the book, is because I wanted to share that information with the largest amount of people possible.
So this isn't just for professional sports people. This isn't for the listener, and listeners, you're all very brilliant, but I don't know how many are trying to shave, you know, 1/10 of a second off their personal best, which I know is something that you actually have done with people just through yeah. their diet. This is something that can be applied to everybody.
It is, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, in the book, I use some of the same evidence-based tips and advice and strategies that I use with elite level athletes, but it certainly applies to everyone at all levels of ability. You know, people like myself, I enjoy exercising recreationally or socially. I enjoy running and going to the gym. I'm in no way would classify myself as an elite athlete, but I can certainly see the results on myself, you know, improved health and energy, and I'm definitely the fittest and strongest I've ever been. And so all of these tips and the advice and strategies can be applied to anyone at any level, and that can be men, women, a whole range of sports or activities, whether that's more endurance-based or strength-based. Like I said, all levels of abilities as well.
Because I think what I've personally have understood is that you can exercise and be fit, but if you're not supporting that with the right kind of food or eating in the right way, you really don't actually feel it. Or feel yeah. all of those benefits. But if you get that balance right between your fitness and your diet, it can feel quite, I'm sure you've seen it with clients, whether it be someone, as you've said, talked about weight management, or whether you're talking about elite athletes, it can make a marked difference to how somebody just feels when they wake up in the morning.
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, most people are aware, you know, at least to some degree, that what we eat can affect our health. But when it comes to performance, like you said, lots of people, you know, spend a lot of time training. So some athletes might spend 20 hours a week training or more, but invest very little time in learning about how to best use their diet to support recovery and boost energy and power in their training and in competitions. You know, I wanted to get across in the book that actually the recovery from exercise, which is supported by your nutrition, is at least equally as important as the training itself, because it's during the recovery, not during the training, that your body and muscles are repairing and adapting and growing. So I think if you're regularly spending, you know, even if it's a couple of hours or a few hours a week training, then taking the relatively short amount of time to learn about nutrition and hone your diet, make all those hours that you put all of this energy and effort into much more productive, usually more enjoyable, and can ultimately lead to huge progress in your sport or activity.
So let's just talk about what a beginner's guide to being vegan might look like. So is it that you would have to take a long run up? And by long run up, I mean plan your grocery shop, plan your meals, plan where you eat out in order to actually be vegan?
It's actually really straightforward. It's not difficult at all. My advice for anyone starting out would be actually for most people to start off gradually. I think, you know, a plant-based diet can be quite different to what you're used to eating, especially if what you're used to eating is a typical Western diet. And so starting out gradually can be a really good idea. And, you know, that might be to start with incorporating maybe 3 or 4 plant-based meals into your weekly diet. You know, finding recipes that you really enjoy and adding those to your repertoire. And starting out gradually like that, I can almost guarantee that if you do that, you'll start to feel and see the health and performance benefits. And then you can take it from there. If you, if you're enjoying that and you want to go a bit further, then absolutely you could go, you know, more towards that, that plant-based sort of further along that spectrum. Or even if that's just, you know, you just stick at that, you know, 3 or 4 plant-based meals a week, there'll still be some profound health and some performance benefits to that as well. So it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You don't have to label yourself or, you know, put yourself into a box. I do believe that the further along that plant-based spectrum you go, the more benefits you'll realize. But at least to start with, you know, even just 3 or 4 meals a week can make a big difference.
Do you think we have become disconnected from how food should feel? And bear with me on this one, because I feel like we almost have got to that thing of, if you eat, then the feeling that you will get is a feeling of fullness. And there's almost this disconnection, as opposed to, well, if I eat this now, this is how I feel will feel tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? Like, we just eat to sort of fill ourselves up.
Yeah, I guess you mean sort of eating mindfully and yeah, consciously. Yeah, I guess I think a lot of people eat, you know, without conscious effort or decisions. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think a plant-based diet is definitely one that does make you feel better. And so if you're on a plant-based diet, you'll kind of realize those benefits without having to necessarily think about how you're going to feel after every meal, if that makes sense.
Mm. No, I don't. So, I agree. Yeah, I just because I definitely know, we've talked a lot in the Facebook group, for example, about various weight issues, and there can almost be a little bit of a fear around food because we eat because it's a pleasure rather than eating, thinking about how it might serve us, you know, in the gym or whatever, which seems to be a little bit more where you come from. So can we talk about rethinking the relationship with meat? Because I'm sure people listening, if they are omnivore or carnivore, they might be thinking, but if I stop eating meat, I will be unable to get protein in my diet. So let's talk about that one, because that's obviously one of the big things that comes up.
Yeah, absolutely. So protein is a very common one. If I was given £1 for every time I was asked about protein, I'd be extremely rich. but it's a common misconception that it might be difficult to get enough protein. You can work out how much protein you need. The average requirements in the UK is it's 0.75 multiplied by your body weight in kilograms. So on average, that works out at about 50 grams a day for women, and on average about 55 grams of protein a day for men. And those are the amounts used on food labels, for example. And studies show that in various populations of people eating a plant-based diet, intakes of protein range between about 60 and 80 grams a day. So even without making a conscious effort, most people eating a plant-based diet have well above the recommended intakes. So super, super easy, even without making a conscious effort. And of course, there are times where increasing your protein intake can be beneficial. So for weight loss, it can be useful. For athletes, it can certainly be useful. So the American College of Sports Nutrition recommends for more endurance-based athletes, increasing that protein intake to about 1.2 times your body weight in kilograms. For more strength-based athletes, you could increase that even further to about 1.6, or even in extreme circumstances, about 2 times your body weight in kilograms. So if it's helpful, I can use myself as an example.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm 80 kilograms. So the average recommendation for most people in the UK, like I said, is 0.75. So 0.75 times 80 is 60 grams a day. So that's the average amount of protein that most people should be having each day if they were 80 kilos. If I were an endurance-based athlete, then I could increase that up to about 1.2. That might be beneficial. So 1.2 times 80 is 96 grams of protein a day. If I were a strength training athlete who and I was training frequently and intensely, then I could increase that even further up to about 1.6. So that would be, or even up to 2. So anywhere between about 130 and 160 grams of protein a day. And all of those protein intakes, even at the highest level, is still very easily achieved on a plant-based diet. Some of the
What might that look like?
Well, so some of the best plant-based sources of protein include things like pulses, so things like lentils, beans, and chickpeas. They're all really high in protein. There's very high protein foods like tofu and tempeh, seitan. Then there's nuts and seeds and nut and seed butters. And then also people massively underestimate the amount of protein in things like grains and even vegetables. So there's about 4 or 5 grams of protein just in one slice of bread or a cup of broccoli. There's about 8 or 9 grams of protein in a cup of frozen peas. So, you know, if you were to include, say, a few portions of the high protein foods, then with the additional protein from things like grains and vegetables, there's even a little bit in fruit, it all very quickly adds up, and it's really, really easy to reach those targets. And that's before you've even thought about things like protein shakes and bars, which can be used to kind of top up your protein intake even further. So in reality, it's very easy to get plenty of protein, even for, you know, elite level strength based athletes.
What if someone's listening to this and they're thinking, I could not tell you a single day in my life when I've known how many grams of protein I have consumed. I could probably give you a rough estimate on my calories. Mm. So we're moving into macro territory here, aren't we? So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was only talking about the sort of numbers there, really just to make the point that it's very easy to reach the amount. And actually, in general, I don't recommend tracking macros or calories. And that's for a whole number of reasons. Firstly, it's very boring and laborious. I don't know if you're a fan of it, but I don't know anyone who's successfully tracked their calories or macros for more than a few months. I just don't think it's a sustainable approach. And also it's quite inaccurate. So in fact, there's a really interesting study conducted in trained dietitians, qualified dietitians. Even they misreported their own calorie intake when they were tasked with tracking their own calorie intake. It was significantly, they underreported it. And lastly, it's quite arbitrary anyway. You can calculate roughly how much you need. So you might come up with this magical number of calories that you need per day. But in reality, your calorie and macro requirements change from day to day anyway, depending on the kind of training that you're doing or whether or not you are training, what you're doing outside of exercise. So whether you spend the rest of the day sitting at your desk or you might be doing some gardening or grocery shopping, it depends on your level of stress, how well you've slept. There's so many factors that influence your calorie and macro needs. So I actually don't recommend tracking calories or macros. What can be useful for some people who enjoy a little bit of structure, and this is something I show people how to do for themselves in the book, is you can work out roughly how many calories or macros you need initially, but then you can translate that into how many portions of each of the major food groups you should be aiming for each day. And then that's a really easy way of adding a bit of structure, but it adds that flexibility in there as well. So you can still account for things like your training and just how hungry you are. You know, if you're hungry, then eat. You should listen to those hunger and fullness signals and eat more intuitively. And doing it that way, it also encourages you to add more variety into your diet. And variety is so important from a nutrition aspect, in terms of making sure we're getting all of the widest spread of nutrients possible. But also it just makes food more enjoyable. If you're having, a variety of different foods and cuisines every day, it helps build that relationship with food and helps you enjoy what you're eating. So yes, in short, for most people, I don't actually recommend tracking calories and macros.
So it's just a case of, and what your book's quite good at doing here is just giving you an idea of what the right sort of amount for the average person might look like. And that's what you wouldn't put it on a scale. It's just what you would see in your fridge or in your larder, for example. You just thought, oh, right, no, I'm picking up that vegetable, or I'm picking up that tin of whatever. I'm putting that together so I know roughly I'm going to have probably in that meal around 50% of the protein that I need today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, if you were aiming for a certain number of portions of high protein foods, for example, you might have your breakfast and lunch and realize, oh, actually, I've only had one portion of kind of the higher protein foods. So maybe I'll try and incorporate one or two more into my dinner today. So it's, it's really simple. It makes it much more intuitive and flexible, like I said.
So if someone's listening to this and they're thinking, well, I'm not an elite athlete, I'm just a regular person who probably is moderately active, but I don't have any specific training goals right now, but I'd still quite like to make the shift. Mm. And you say to do it gradually. When you say do the shift gradually, would you say, for example, cut out red meat first and move on to chicken and fish? Or would you have another strategy?
It really depends on the individual. And there's no one size fits all approach. And that's true for every aspect of nutrition, not just about making the switch to a plant-based diet. So it really depends what you're comfortable with, really. It might, like I said earlier, it might just involve making a few swaps. So, you can make, if you're used to making a minced meat, minced beef chili, you could substitute that with a really nice sort of rich, hearty chili that's made with quinoa and beans and lentils and flavored with lots of different herbs and spices and things. Same for curries. I think curries are a really great place to start because, they lend themselves really well to plant-based eating just because they're so rich and flavorsome. So you could start out with making a few substitutions like that and adding a few more meals into your repertoire. Your suggestion, some people might enjoy just cutting out red meat to begin with and then taking it from there. It really depends what you're comfortable with, if there's any preferences there as well, really.
Okay, so say I've moved away from red meat. I'm thinking I'm using chicken and fish to get my protein. That's okay. Like, I mean, that obviously we're moving towards plant-based, but I mean, is it that I have to start having cauliflower steaks? Because I've had one of those once and it wasn't that great.
I'm not a fan of cauliflower steaks. I've tried them as well. And I think the word steak is highly misrepresented. do it gradually. Find the recipes that you really enjoy and that are easy but still really tasty, and adding those to your repertoire. You mentioned, I'm still having chicken and fish for the protein, but I guess it's about a little bit about educating people that you still don't need those for protein. Mm. You can get, like I said, more than enough protein. Most people get more than enough even without making a conscious effort. So if you did have some conscious effort, then it's even easier to get more than enough protein.
Because I think we can all think about that plate of food that we've seen in our heads, or we've seen on all those information pamphlets, that's like 30% red meat, 30% a potato, 30% carrot and a bit of veg. And, that whole way that the plates are divided up. One of the things that I've heard time and time again about plant-based diets is that there are going to be nutritional deficiencies, because how are you going to get all of these nutrients just from plant-based foods? And I sort of scratched my head about that, because I would almost think, well, wouldn't you get more vitamins and minerals from natural things as opposed to animals. But this again must be a little bit like the protein question, people saying to you, what about my vitamin B? What about my vitamin D? What about my iron?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're absolutely right. And actually studies show that people eating a plant-based diet tend to have much higher diet overall dietary quality scores. So that accounts for all of the vitamins and minerals. And that's because, you know, it's not surprising, if you're on a plant-based diet, you eat more plants. So things like fruits and vegetables and whole grains, pulses, nuts and seeds, and all of these foods are incredible nutritional packages that come with an abundance of vitamins and minerals and antioxidants and other really important plant phytonutrients. In general, like I said, overall dietary quality scores tend to be higher among people eating a plant-based diet. There are a few nutrients that you sort of need to bear in mind if you're on a plant-based diet, but actually there are for every population. So for example, in the UK, the government recommends that everybody at least considers taking a vitamin D supplement, especially during the winter months, because vitamin D deficiency is so widespread. It's up to about a third or one in four people. It's even higher among minority groups. It's recommended that everyone at all stages of life consider a vitamin D supplement. In America and Canada, the government recommends that everybody over the age of 50 take a vitamin B12 supplement. And that's because the absorption of vitamin B12 from food decreases as we age. So it's recommended that everyone over the age of 50 gets their B12 from either supplements or fortified foods.
Inability to absorb vitamin B12, can that actually have a knock-on effect and lead to diabetes, or be one of the contributing factors to late onset diabetes type 2?
There's links with vitamin B12 deficiency and many chronic diseases. You need vitamin B12 to make healthy red blood cells, to make healthy nerve cells. You need it to help break down a metabolite called homocysteine, which is something your body produces. And when homocysteine levels are high, that's linked with cardiovascular disease and chronic inflammation. So B12 deficiency is really important to address. And that's why in America and Canada, everyone over the age of 50, it's recommended they get their B12 from supplements or fortified foods. And then there are lots of other examples. You know, even bread in the UK, by law, has to...
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
We fortified with 4 nutrients. They're calcium, iron, thiamine, and niacin, which are vitamins B1 and B3. And that's introduced by law. It was in back in the 1990s, I think. And that was introduced to address the widespread deficiencies in those nutrients. And then there are more specific populations like athletes and women during pregnancy, where various supplements are usually recommended. So yes, there are a few nutrients that it's important to consider on a plant-based diet, but there are for almost every population. And there are many nutrients that you're at far lower risk of deficiency in on a plant-based diet. So things like fiber, which is really, really important for gut health and overall health, magnesium, potassium, folate, vitamin C, all of those nutrients tend to be higher on a plant-based diet. So, you know, I really don't think it's a big deal at all if you're on a plant-based diet, you need to focus on just a handful of key nutrients. But with that being said, paying some attention to those key nutrients, which I cover in great detail in the book, it will help make sure that you're getting the most out of the diet and reaping all of the health and performance benefits as much as possible.
And you said something there about the what's been put into bread by law in order for actual benefits. But let's talk about what's put into food that maybe isn't so beneficial, because one of the things we can sort of say, whether you're moving away from meat, for example, or not, you're probably then going to be moving away from quite a bit of processed food, because a lot of the meat food that we consume is processed. But quite a few people, and actually in the Facebook group, and my learned friend, Claire Coleman, friend of the show, they all asked about the processing in vegan or plant-based substitutes, and how they get very worried about things like all the processing that goes into vegan chicken nuggets or vegan burgers, and how there have been studies or analyses of these where it just looks pretty bad about what's actually in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'd say those sort of mock meats, they're relatively new foods. So there's not actually been that much research done on their health effects yet. Having said that, there is, like you said, some emerging evidence. There was a recent Stanford University study that showed that swapping red meat for plant-based meat alternatives significantly reduced blood levels of a compound called TMAO, which is trimethylamine N-oxide. And that's a molecule that's strongly linked with cardiovascular disease. And that same study also showed significantly lower LDL cholesterol, which is the bad type of cholesterol, when making the switch to plant-based alternatives. And I think in that study, they used Beyond Burgers, if you've heard of those. It's a plant-based burger, but they're pretty highly processed. They're designed to kind of really look and taste and feel like meat. And so, you know, I'm sure those health benefits would be even more exaggerated if they swapped them for, you know, healthy homemade burgers.
Right.
So, you know, there are some benefits, you know, even to the more processed options. I guess it's just about avoiding the trap of relying on them too heavily. As like you said, they're often quite highly processed, quite a lot of added salts and tropical oils like palm and coconut oil. So my view is that they can be useful in moderation. I enjoy them from time to time, but I try and base my diet mostly around home cooked food. But that's the same advice to everyone, no matter what diet you're following. And you know, it's one of the reasons I felt it was so important to include some really easy and quick recipes in the book to help encourage people to cook more meals at home, because that's one of the best ways to reap all of the health and performance benefits.
One of the things I was going to ask you, I was listening to something a couple of weeks ago, I was listening to a podcast in the car, and there was a health expert on there with a range of expertise talking about how if you make sure that your muscle mass is good, then it will serve you very, very well in old age in terms of not getting frail and what have you. And then one of the things he was talking about was moving away from meat to a plant-based diet and the psychology of it, and actually one of the impacts it has on the brain. I don't know if you have any insight on this, but essentially how when we eat meat, it triggers a very primal part of our brain that thinks that we've just hunted something down and we've feasted on the meat, and therefore the body recognizes that as being a time of almost feast. And when we eat more plant-based diets, the same trigger will think, I'm between my big meaty meal, and actually the body runs more efficiently because it knows that it's got to use its energy slightly differently because there's no big meaty meal in the near future. Does that make any sense to you? And does that really play into the fact that a plant-based diet would make you more efficient as a sort of fat-burning machine, as a you know, and performance and what have you?
You know, I haven't come across that before. I've got to be honest.
I'll find the link and send it to you.
I'll be interested to look that up. What I do know is that there are, you know, several proven mechanisms behind the health benefits of a plant-based diet. In general, I like to categorize them into two main categories. I find that quite useful. So firstly, the fact that if you're on a plant-based diet, you tend to eat more plants. And I know that's quite obvious. But there are even studies that show that people on a plant-based diet, I think I mentioned earlier, they tend to have improved dietary quality scores. And those scores account for intake of whole plant foods like fruit and vegetables, but also pulses and nuts and seeds and things. And that's really important because you're increasing your intake of antioxidants. They help to fight oxidative stress and free radical damage, and which those mechanisms are involved in almost every chronic disease. Eating more whole plant foods helps to support your gut health, thanks to the high fiber content. And remember, fiber comes almost exclusively from plants. And there's so much research at the moment discovering just how much our gut health can influence almost every other system within the body. So really shouldn't underestimate the importance of gut health. Eating more plants has been shown to be the most effective way to support a healthy weight, which again influences almost every other system in the body. So that's the first category of reasons that if you're on a plant-based diet, you tend to eat more plants. The second category of reasons, again, it's very obvious, but if you're on a plant-based diet, you greatly reduce or you eliminate your intake of meat and animal products like cheese and eggs. And that's also important because there's several components of those animal products which can be detrimental to our health. So things they contain like heme iron, which is the type of iron found in animal-based foods versus plant-based foods, that can promote the production of free radicals within the gut. Nitrosamines found mostly in processed meats like ham and bacon and sausages and salami, that kind of thing. Saturated fats and cholesterol, you know, it's been shown time and time again that intake of saturated fat increases our LDL, cholesterol, which is our bad cholesterol, and increases risk of cardiovascular disease. TMAO, that's that molecule I mentioned earlier, that increases when we eat more meat and poultry and fish and eggs. Then there's compounds generated during cooking, especially when you're cooking meat at high temperatures, like grilling or barbecuing. And then potentially some antibiotic residues, which can disrupt our gut microbiome. So, you know, for me, when you take all this evidence into account, you know, the higher intake of whole plant foods and lower intake of some potentially detrimental compounds in animal products, then it's really no surprise that if you're on a plant-based diet, it's been shown that you'll have much lower risk of the most prevalent and important chronic diseases in the West.
It's true. So then this is where we come to the issue of all the conflicting advice, because you make such a good case. And actually, you don't just make a good case for it here. In the book, honestly, listeners, when you get to the section on the health benefits of going plant-based, I don't see how you can then not look at a piece of meat differently. Personally, that was my experience of going through that section. But then I follow someone like Joe Rogan, for example, obviously in really good nick, can kickbox you into next week if he fancies it. But he basically lives on elk that he's shot and killed himself and jalapenos. And he would make a really good case for that. So, and you've got paleo, like I have friends who at one point were making really rich chilies and grating chorizo into it because they were like, yeah, more meat, more flavor. Maybe not with that particular voice, but I kind of imagine it. So then you've got the other side of it. And obviously in your job, you must observe and be aware of all of the data that's out there. And I guess one of the things to anyone I speak to who works in this sort of discipline is it's constantly evolving. There's constantly new evidence emerging. But how can there be such different standpoints? You've got people who are like, all meat. And then you've got people who are like, all plants. How can you have, but all showing really good results?
Well, I'd say the science and data supports the plant-based end of that spectrum much more strongly than the sort of meat and paleo keto diets. Certainly with regards to the health benefits, but also there's growing evidence that it supports performance and recovery more effectively as well. And, you know, I've talked about some of those mechanisms by which a plant-based diet can improve your health. But actually, it's some of those exact same mechanisms behind those health benefits are what drive the benefits in performance and recovery too. So it's things like the higher antioxidant intake. We mentioned the effects of that on health. But those antioxidants, as well as improving your health, they also improve recovery, which is, you know, that's really important for both strength and endurance-based sports. And it's something, by the way, that can't be replicated by taking antioxidant supplements. Those can actually impair recovery. It has to come from whole plant foods, just because supplements, they can't replicate the complexity of whole plant foods like fruits and vegetables, which contain thousands of plant compounds that work in synergy when you eat them. So, you know, it helps support recovery, and any improvements in recovery means better adaptations to your exercise, and it means you can train harder and more frequently. And the cumulative effects of that over the course of, say, you know, an entire sporting season can be enormous. Then there's things like flavanols intake of which tends to be very high on a plant-based diet because they're found in lots of different fruits and vegetables. They've been shown in various studies to improve maximal oxygen uptake, otherwise known as VO2 max. They can enhance fat oxidation, reduce the oxygen cost of exercise. They help muscles to use ATP, which is like the energy currency of our cells, more efficiently. And all that results in increased exercise efficiency and overall improved performance. That's been shown in many, many studies. The lower intake of saturated fat, you know, we talked about how that can affect health and risk of cardiovascular disease. But it also improves your blood rheology, which is a measure of how well your blood flows effectively. And again, that has implications for health, but it's also directly linked with performance. And studies have shown improved blood rheology, both in long-standing vegans and in more controlled trials, within just 6 weeks of adopting a plant-based diet. And then there's things like dietary nitrates and nitrites, which are found in various vegetables. They help improve circulation. There's more obvious mechanisms like how a plant-based diet can help to reduce body fat percentage in a more sustainable way. So that improves your power to weight ratio, and that's beneficial in most sports. So you can see how there's lots of different mechanisms by which a plant-based diet can improve performance, and how most of those are actually linked with those well-documented health benefits as well.
I mean, so many of them in those the book. I honestly think my jaw hit the floor when I started looking at like 15% reduction, particularly in female cancers, and all of those things. But listeners, I'll let you find that out for yourself in the book. But let's talk about practically moving to plant-based, because this is where your expertise can really help us. One of the things that came up actually was about the perishability of plant-based foods and how that can be a challenge. And maybe if you don't want to go to the substitutes. And I just wonder if you have any insight on that, really, because that was something that I know when I spoke to friends and said, I'm going to be speaking to somebody who really knows what they're talking about when it comes to veganism. A lot of people said it's just the fact that you go in with a good intention and then everything goes off. And
yeah, well, I guess it's the same advice there as for any diet, in that things like planning your shopping and meals, buying the ingredients specifically for meals rather than just going to the shop, buying lots of things and hoping for the best. Cooking in bulk is usually a really great option as well. The great thing about plant-based eating is that a lot of the ingredients can be just store cupboard staples. So I often find, you know, when we're getting towards the end, when we're due a big grocery shop, and we haven't got much fresh food in the fridge, you can still make some really highly nutritious and healthy meals with what you have in the store cupboard. And actually, I don't think that's as true for sort of meat and animal based recipes. So that potentially that could be an advantage there. So make sure your cupboard's stocked up with cans of chickpeas and lentils, and and your freezer full of frozen foods as well. Frozen foods can be just as nutritious as fresh foods, and in fact studies show that there's almost no nutritional difference between fresh and frozen foods, and if anything, the frozen foods sometimes have a higher nutrient content than fresh, because when you're choosing frozen foods, they're normally picked and frozen at their perfect ripeness, and usually frozen within a couple of hours. Whereas when you buy fresh foods, you don't know how long they've been sitting on the shelves, then they can sit in your fridge for another few days. So yeah, make sure your cupboard staples and your freezer are stocked up.
Definitely. So in other words, perishability isn't really a barrier, because...
I don't think so. I don't think any more so than if you were buying, if you had meat and cheese in your fridge.
Now, I like coffee. Listeners will know that I like my coffee. And a few years ago, before I discovered the pleasures of an oat milk flat white, because I'm not a big fan of dairy milk, I love the chocolate, not the cow's milk. I used to use soy because that was the most available dairy alternative. And I remember going to a lunch and sitting between two learned friends, one a nutritionist and one a longtime health and beauty writer. And I ordered a soy cappuccino or a soy flat white or something. And I, when I was younger, had PCOS. And this friend just looked at me and went, "With your hormone issues, you're drinking soy. What about the phytoestrogens?" And I have not touched soy since. But that, again, is something that came up in the Facebook group of a lot of the substitutes are soy-based. Will that have any implication, especially as I am female and I'm worried about hormones, endocrine system, et cetera?
Well, it's a common misconception about soy and its effects on health. There have been now numerous meta-analyses done. It's the highest level of evidence we could ask for. I guess for anyone who doesn't know, any of your listeners, meta-analyses are where they researchers combine the results from numerous different studies to give you the best overall picture of what all of the science and data shows on any given topic. So it's not relying on any single study. And meta-analyses show soy foods to be incredibly healthy. And they can, in fact, decrease risk of many female-specific cancers. And for any men, if you have men listening as well, I know a lot of men worry that increasing intake of soy might decrease testosterone levels. But again, that's been shown to be completely untrue. The reason that myth exists is because studies a couple of decades ago were conducted on rats that showed that increased soy intake, they contain isoflavones, which are a type of phytoestrogen. In the rats, they did decrease testosterone levels. But numerous studies have been conducted, controlled clinical trials in humans that show that soy intake doesn't affect testosterone levels at all, even above higher than average intakes of soy. So, I would argue that the science and data almost shows the opposite to be true. They can be incredibly healthy. There are specific mechanisms by which it can be healthy, but also it's the displacement theory, which is where a lot of the time you're having soy to replace things like red meat and processed meat, and something like tofu or soybeans might make up the protein in your meal. So there's direct mechanisms and the sort of displacement theory Both of those reasons can mean that soy can be incredibly healthy to include in your diet.
Oh, honestly, every single person I've spoken to has brought up the question, who works in my colleagues, I should say, has brought up the soy question. And this really brings us back to one of the problems that we talked about at the beginning of the show, which is there's so much conflicting information out there. And then there'll be one study, and it's true in the beauty industry. So there's the data that was quoted in the 80s, I think, about aluminium in deodorant potentially being found in breast cancer tissue. And that gets quoted and quoted and quoted time and time again, even though there have been many studies since that have shown that not to be a direct link. But it seems to be that plant-based and particularly nutrition is where this happens quite a lot, where one thing gets wheeled out early doors. It seems like it's quite scary, therefore, oh, best avoid. And then you speak to someone like you who is up to date with all of the evolving and growing information, and you can say, actually, based on what I'm reading, that that isn't the case. So one of the useful things you do in the book is you do really hold people's hands through how to really read and understand what information they are seeing and really get the most out of it and know what's real and what isn't.
Yeah, I've dedicated a whole chapter in the book to kind of show people and teach people how to weigh up the evidence themselves, because it's one of the greatest challenges I have when I speak with when I work with clients, is that they have so many misconceptions and sort of preconceived ideas that they've heard from maybe their teammates or friends. There's so much misinformation out there, and I think it's partly because the word nutritionist in the UK isn't legally protected, not in the same way like the words doctor or dietitian are. So actually anyone can call themselves a nutritionist, even if they've just done like a, you know, a 2-day online course or something. And then on top of that, the whole nutrition and diet industry can be very lucrative. So we're always being told we need to sort of buy expensive superfoods or try out fad diets and detoxes, or, you know, avoid certain things without any real scientific grounding to them. They exist really just to make money and make sales. And then there's much more kind of nuanced agendas as well. So, you know, people have very strong entrenched beliefs around food, and especially around veganism or plant-based eating. So, you know, you can Google a very simple question and, you know, something like, is fruit good for you? And, you know, the science on that is unanimous. Fruit is incredibly healthy. But if you were to Google it, you'll be shown very conflicting messages. So it's a real minefield. And I know it all sounds quite skeptical or negative to say that. And I know there's some sound advice out there. But I just like to encourage my clients or the readers of the book to look for articles that discuss both sides of any argument. I think if you're reading an article and it's very one-sided, the chances are they're trying to either sell you something, or they might have an agenda, or, you know, more one of those kind of nuanced agendas that maybe they don't even themselves realize. And ideally, any advice you read should provide the evidence so you can make up your own mind depending on your situation and your goals and requirements, because everyone's individual, they have different needs. And so, yeah, that's why I've put a whole chapter in the book to give you the tools you need to kind of weigh up the evidence yourself. And I hope also in doing that, it shows people that the evidence that I discuss throughout the book is all based on the best available evidence that we have. And I talk about the pitfalls in the evidence as well. I think it's important to be completely open and honest about that. But on balance, you know, the evidence is there about the benefits for plant-based diet. And that's both in terms of health and, you know, recovery and performance as well.
And one of the other things I just wanted to say before we come to the end of our time together is that of all of the different ways of eating or the diets that you see on Instagram being touted as the next weight loss thing, it does feel actually as though plant-based diet is the one that is the least co-opted for that reason. You see people selling ketogenic shakes, ketogenic drinks, various protein shakes or all of these cleanses or what have you. But I don't, I actually went onto Instagram last night. I was like, right, I'm going to find like a plant-based weight loss. I'm going to find where this noise is happening. And it was far less visible. And I wondered if you had any insight on why you think that is.
I guess it's it might be something to do with the motivation behind it. I think people who advocate plant-based diets generally have good intentions. And it's also, you know, because actually the evidence is there to support it. I think when you're looking at something which isn't backed by the evidence, then I think people who are, you know, selling those products or advocating those kind of diets, they kind of need to shout about it more and, you know, make more of a noise about it. Whereas when the evidence is there, you can relay that evidence and the research and the data and let people make their own minds up. I don't think you have to be quite as pushy necessarily.
Well, I wondered as well, I mean, if somebody listening to this was suddenly to make a shift and go keto for 2 weeks or was suddenly to make a shift and adopt a similar premise to the Atkins diet, they would see an obvious result in those 2 weeks because it would be such a big change. And there probably would be, say, for example, weight loss. But with plant-based, it seems like it's much more gradual and it feels like it's less about weight loss. It's more about, which obviously weight loss trends, and it's more about how it makes you feel and the quality of your health. And one of the interesting things you say in the section about health is how a lot of the cardiovascular diseases are asymptomatic for a long time before they actually manifest. And so the way that you eat can make them worse when you get older, but you can actually be contributing towards them. This idea that you can be 25 and eat whatever you like isn't actually fundamentally true.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Atherosclerosis, which is, you know, the buildup of plaque in our arteries that eventually leads to cardiovascular disease, starts as early as childhood. So it's never too early to start thinking about your cardiovascular health and how your diet can influence that. I think that's, you know, a plant-based diet is definitely has long-term health benefits as well as the more immediate improvements in energy and performance and so on. So something like a keto diet or, you know, a low-carb, high-protein diet that's heavily meat-based, you might see short-term immediate results, but they're not exactly sustainable. Mm-hmm. They're not exactly healthy. And actually the science shows that, again, there was another meta-analysis done regarding weight loss that showed that a plant-based diet was the most effective of all diets for long-term sustainable, both weight maintenance and weight loss, even more effective than diets. They compared it with the Atkins diet and even the American Diabetes Association diet. I mean, there's a multitude of reasons why that might be the case. I think you touched on perhaps the more sort of psychological motivation side of things. So I think most weight loss diets, obviously their main focus, their main goal is weight loss. Whereas if you're on a plant-based diet, there's usually more than one motive. So you might do it because you've heard that there might be some weight loss benefits, but usually people also do it because of the overall health benefits, the performance benefits. It might be to do with animal welfare or the environment as well. So there's much more motivation to kind of stick with it for the long term. So they tend to be much more sustainable.
This is really helpful, TJ. I feel like I understand it a lot more. And it's not a diet. The diet is what you eat, but it's more of a lifestyle change. It's something to be slow and methodical about. It's something to read up about. And it's actually, do you know what, from listening to you, it's a lot easier than I thought. And all the drawbacks that I'd heard about, you very quickly have been able to say, actually, nutritional deficiencies, all of this, you know, getting your macros, whether you're tracking them or not, they're not the big issues that maybe you've been sold that they are.
Yeah, I think that the bigger picture are the profound overall health and performance benefits. The what you call drawbacks, I prefer to call them considerations, because I think they're just things that you might just need to consider. They certainly won't hold you back if you plan them well. They all revolve around just a handful of specific nutrients, which are very, very easy to correct, either through making tweaks or changes to your diet, or by taking supplements or using fortified foods. So when you look at the overall picture, I think that that's a very small price to pay for those incredible and profound health and performance benefits.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And on your website, do you have a sample meal? Because perhaps a lot of people will be thinking, I want to give this a go. I'm going to see. I know you've got them in the book, but you've got 30 delicious recipes in the book. But if I direct people to your website as well, will they get a bit more of an insight on how they could maybe put a plant-based meal together?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got loads of recipes on the website. So I think I touched on it earlier, as well as being a registered nutritionist. I've also spent years working in kitchens. So I've kind of been able to hone my chefing skills during that time. I also work at, sometimes go into the leading vegan cookery school in the country, where I teach vegan cooking and nutrition. And so I wanted to kind of use those, my experience in chefing and cooking, to create some really easy but delicious recipes. In the book, I also kind of link that back to the nutrients and show how those recipes can so easily incorporate loads of the really important nutrients. But yes, on the website as well, I've got loads of really easy recipes, which could be a great place to start.
Brilliant. Well, I will obviously be directing people to those. I will also put the link in the show notes to the book, which is really, really fascinating, because again, even just the how to read evidence, how to understand what the health benefits are, you lay it out really, really cleanly. It's very much, and like you say, all of that clinical data is very, very seductive. So thank you so much for your time. I will obviously put the links to your social media in the show notes as well. But thank you, TJ, for coming on the show.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening. I do hope you enjoyed that conversation with TJ and me. If you would like to get in touch with me, email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. I don't have to say it more than once. You know I love hearing from you. You can DM me on Instagram and Twitter, where I'm at Emma Guns. Or if you fancy chatting to me and thousands of other listeners of this podcast, then please don't hesitate to go to the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode, and click the link to join the Facebook forum. There are thousands of us in there, and it's a lovely, supportive community. And I know that during lockdown, it has been such a supportive and helpful place for lots of you, including me. So please, we'd love to see you there. Answer the questions, agree to the rules, and you'll be welcomed in with open arms. And genuinely, I cannot wait to see you there. Thank you so much for listening. I will, of course, see you on the next one.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.